Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Wednesday, April 28th, 2021. It is the 118th day of the year. And we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today to spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever discovered to improve the quality of my life, manage my emotions and relationships, and turn the negative emotional states that I may experience from time to time into part of the infallible guidance system that we are all gifted with. These tools are available absolutely free at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the red and white bullseye or the link in the upper left-hand corner of most pages, it says start here. It will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of that book provides a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet or Worksheet Process, and it's available absolutely free on that website as a PDF file. You just click it and download it, print it off, and use it as often as you'd like. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness and get access to a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. If you do that, which we encourage people to do soon and often, get access to the tools, put them to use in your own life, and then give us a call if you have questions or comments or testimonials. Our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And if you call that number and press 1, it'll put a little question mark by your phone number, and I will announce it by your area code, and we can have a conversation. We are in the year where we have made the commitment to do the Course in Miracles workbook lessons, and this is 118th day, which means today is lesson 118. It's a review. It's a review of lesson 105, which states, God's peace and joy are mine. Today I will accept God's peace and joy in glad exchange for all the substitutes that I have made, substitutes for happiness and peace that were never satisfying. Lesson 106 says, let me be still and listen to truth. Let my own feeble voice be still and let me hear the mighty voice, for truth itself assure me that I am creation's perfect product and offspring. So on the hour, we're called to recite, the Creator's peace and joy are mine. And on the half hour, we are called to remember to say, let peace, let me be still and listen to truth. Let me be still and listen to truth. In the book, the Pam Grout, A Course in Miracles Experiment, her lesson 118 is titled, Change the Plot Points. She quotes John Krakauer, as saying, the only person you are fighting is yourself and your stubbornness to engage in new circumstances. She writes, for morning and evening review, I gladly exchange my pretend world for peace and joy. And then, in the evening review, there's a mighty voice broadcasting a completely different story. She writes, a group of cells about the size of a gumdrop hang out at the base of your brainstem. This control center, known as the Reticular Activating System, RAS for short, sorts and evaluates incoming data. It sends what it thinks is urgent to the active part of the brain and steers the non-urgent stuff to the back. But while it's organizing, it's also interpreting, drawing inferences, and filtering out anything that doesn't jibe with your story. The good news is you can change your story. You can exchange the plot points that the reticular activating system is currently sending to the active part of your brain to the plot points we're promised in these lessons. It's as straightforward as 5 minutes in the morning and 5 minutes before sleep. Change the story. Change what you focus on. Change what you expect to see. And it changes your experience of life. In the morning, Creator's peace and joy are mine. And in the evening, let me be still and listen to the truth. So those are our offerings for today from the Course in Miracles workbook and Pam Grout's Course in Miracles experiment book. And we have plenty of time for a conversation. 52 minutes left. Our call in number is 563-999-3581. And if you call that number and press 1, we can have a conversation. What's on your mind today? We had our support group last night, and we listened to a Guy Finley talk from, I think, April 18th. And it was one of the unusual talks where he only talked for half an hour instead of an hour and gave an extended time for Q&A. And it was a multifaceted talk, as usual, with Guy Finley. He told some stories, which was what he used to do almost every talk. He'd have two or three stories in a talk, and that's why I enjoyed some of his older talks more. And again, it's pretty much exactly the same thing that we're looking at. All deep spiritual truths run pretty much uniformly across all wisdom schools. And the truth about how it's an inside job and the truth about how if I rationalize being negative and I let my mind tell me how it's acceptable for me to be angry, bitter, resentful, violent, insulting, etc., then I stay trapped in that cycle of negativity. And he was talking last night in the pattern of building bridges over troubled waters and the understanding that, psychologically speaking, any troubled waters that we experience are of our own creation. And there isn't any need to build a bridge over those troubled waters. There's only a need to see that it isn't the waters that are troubled, it's our mind that is troubled. And if we can step into the realization of how we are creating the experience of upset, then we can start to engage that part of our mind differently that can construct a different experience of life. And again, that's exactly what the Course in Miracles lessons are trying to help us do, to become aware of how actively we are participating in the creation of our experience of life. If I can understand that, you know, I have a saying I've been using for a number of years now, and it's distilled out of the Course in Miracles and Way of Mastery, but it says, I want to tell you two things. The first thing is, you have the infinite capacity to choose the focus of your conscious awareness in each new given moment. The second thing I want to tell you is, it is the focus of your conscious awareness in each new given moment that is what creates your experience of life in each moment. There's no wiggle room there. That's just the way it is. You are an infinite creator. You're always creating. And you don't have any choice about that. What you have choice over is, are you going to create from the positive perspective, from the contentment, gratitude, appreciation perspective, or from the grievance perspective, as the Course in Miracles would call us to let go of our grievances. Well, Guy Finley says that very same thing, slightly differently. He's a writer and far more poetic, and he says the same thing in the following phrase: as goes my attention, so comes my reality, my experience. I only experience what I pay attention to. As goes my attention, so comes my experience. We are creating our experience of life in each moment by what we choose to focus and pay attention to and how we choose to interpret those things that we're focused on. And one of the things we're called to in this work and every other true spiritual teaching is the recognition that everything about my life experience is an inside job. So if I can understand that anytime I'm experiencing something that's unpleasant, as Michael Rice would say in one of the earlier worksheets, if I'm in pain, if I'm having a negative emotional state, it means I'm in error. My thoughts are off the mark. I'm focusing on the wrong few bits of data, or I'm creating a negative interpretation from the right bits of data. And so once I recognize my active role in creating my experience of life, and I step closer and closer to that 100% responsibility for everything I'm experiencing, physically, mentally, and emotionally, the greater control I have over my experience of life, and the better my life becomes, because unless I'm completely irrational, I start to move more and more towards the creation of a life that's based in appreciation and joy and aliveness and creativity and respect and compassion. And I'm creating what some would call heaven right here on earth. I think it was just yesterday that I was reading from the Tao Made Easy and talking about how most spiritual traditions talk about the apocalypse, and the Tao is trying to help us understand that the apocalypse is here now. The apocalypse is all the greed and the warring and the conflict. It's not about an apocalypse that's going to be coming. It's not like the end of the physical world as we know it that most people turn that into to generate fear. The recognition is that there are human beings all over the planet, day in and day out, that are creating, contributing to, and continuing to build the war, the famine, the bitterness, the hatred that is the apocalypse. And once we become aware of our active role in the creation of that process, we can choose to step aside and create differently or dismantle that our part of that process we don't have to wait for some time to come when there might be a volcano that explodes or some other natural disaster, some other natural occurrence that we label a disaster. And we can begin actively working within our own minds each and every day to dismantle the process that contributes to the apocalypse that is already here. And that's what this is about. This work is about the reality management worksheet and making it available to people absolutely free and encouraging them to use it every day. And if they don't get out their pen and their paper and write every day, to at least every day be using, you know, the mental short version of it, which is the recognition that if I'm in pain, my thoughts are in error. So let me cancel everything I think I want and ask to be shown a different way to look at this situation. Let me understand that there's always another story. There's always another way to look at the very same data points and interpret them. On a regular basis, I'll have people come into my office and be working with me, and they'll tell a story. And at the end of the story, I'm thinking, wow, they did a fabulous job with this situation. And they're in tears or in rage, beating themselves up with the conclusion that they did it all wrong and they're not good enough, etc. And I'm just shocked. And sometimes I'm successful in getting them to see my interpretation of the story that they just presented to me, and sometimes I'm not. Sometimes it's just, it's I have to let go of trying to get them to change because they are so hooked on their story. And I remember one very powerful situation, and the woman was describing to me how she handled getting through having a miscarriage when she had to be caring for her four-year-old daughter, and her daughter was, you know, insistent that her mom let her into the bathroom because her daughter was not familiar with the people that were in the house at the time, and she was feeling this, what, you know, people would call anxiety, reactive attachment disorder, anxiety, whatever you want to call it, separation anxiety. And so this woman described how she let her daughter into the bathroom and played with her with toys on the floor, and all the while she was having this massively bloody miscarriage, and she was able to do the whole thing, and her daughter was not at all aware of any of it. Her daughter was just focused on the toys they were playing with on the floor. And at the end of it, she was just crying and sobbing about how what a horrible mother she was to let her daughter be in that situation, to expose her to that. And I was listening to the story from her perspective, and all I saw was like world-class protective mothering, loving, supportive, tuned to the child's needs, putting her own needs aside. Same data points, arranged differently, dramatically different interpretation of events. And we do this all the time. And one of the core pieces of this work is for me to wake up and understand that every time I interpret my life events or my actions or someone else's actions and I come up with a negative emotional state internally, the most useful thing for me to do before speaking or acting is call a timeout, turn the focus inside, and dismantle the negative interpretation and the negative emotions that go with it, because those emotions are distorting my perception. And I don't care how accurate I think my view of the world is, if it's leaving me feeling grief, rage, hurt, confusion, it's not an accurate picture I'm seeing. That's one of the core observations in this work. And if it's a really important situation, as so many of the things in our lives we think are, then it would be a really good thing for me to get an accurate picture rather than running around taking action impulsively based on a flawed picture or a partial picture. or a distorted interpretation of an accurate picture. I mean, most of us have, at this point in our lives, have had exposure to what might be called what is the word for these distortions in perception. You know, you look at a vase, the picture of a vase. No, it's a picture of two people looking at each other. Optical illusions, right? Most of us have seen these things. Look at this picture. What do you see? Do you see a young woman or do you see an old lady? And as you change your perspective, as you change what you're looking for, the picture that your mind shows you changes. The external stimulus hasn't changed at all. Right? Is this a rabbit or a duck? I'm just barking out some of these that I've seen, these optical illusions that are common. Certainly on the internet these days, but it used to be that to find these, you'd have to go to a puzzle magazine or you'd have to go to an introductory psychology book where they were studying this stuff because they were studying perception. And what most people don't even slow down enough to realize is how fascinating it is and what it can reveal to us about our own process of perception when we are looking at the same stimulation, the same picture, the same light bouncing off the picture that we were 5 minutes ago, only now we can't see what we saw before. We're seeing something completely different because somebody said, look, notice how this is a horse running and not a picture of two boys playing. And all of a sudden, once I see, in quotes, quote, see, close quotes, the picture of the two horses running, now I can't make my brain show me the picture of the two boys playing. Now that I see a rabbit, I can't see the duck anymore. But when I first look at the picture or the image on the page, all I saw was a duck. Well, let us step into realizing that this simple tool of these optical illusions is helping us see why it's so useful to have a reality management worksheet. Because every time I have a negative emotional state, the very best use of that emotional state is for me to use it as an alarm system and turn my focus inside myself with the realization that no matter what I might be seeing accurately, I'm either seeing it inaccurately or I'm interpreting it negatively in a way that it doesn't need to be interpreted. And unless or until I can dismantle that negative interpretation and or the negative emotional states that I'm generating with that interpretation, I'm not going to be able to act in a way that's likely to be result in my best interest or the best interest of the people I love and care about. And that's why we encourage people to pick up a reality management worksheet anytime they're upset, anytime they have sadness or fear or emotional hurt or they feel betrayed and they're absolutely convinced that, you know, they're justified in raging at their friend, their neighbor, their husband, their wife, their sister, their brother. Well, yeah, you can justify raging, but that doesn't mean it's going to be beneficial for you to rage. That doesn't mean you're going to be able to make any kind of a positive change in your life experience. And what we're interested in with this work is helping people proactively make changes in their life, make choices in their life that improve their life. Move from the negative emotional states and the alarm system telling us that we're in error into a space of productive response to life events. I had somebody in the office earlier this morning that was talking about, her word for it is, she has the wrecking ball of rage that gets started in her. And once that gets started, she's off to the races. She is not thinking clearly, and she knows a part of her mind is telling her, this is silly, you know, you want to go scream at somebody, you want to go reverse this business deal, you want to go, you know, firebomb that business. And she knows better than to do that, but she doesn't have the capacity at this early stage in her work to stop that wrecking ball of rage process, that automatic response of the negative emotion and all of the hurtful things her mind tells her to do in response to that rage. So the most, you know, useful thing, and she's been able to do so far, is to just stop and to give herself a timeout and to start, you know, breathing, tapping, using a meditation app on her phone, doing the reality management worksheet, just interrupting the process in her own thought that's generating this rage before deciding what to say or do differently. And one of the things I offer that's been so useful in my own work is the realization that it's kind of an adjunct to the concept that it's all an inside job. How many different ways can I look at, can I have reminders for myself that it's all an inside job? Well, there are several of them in the bottom line observations that I give people in a first or second session. One of them is the fourth observation that says, I can only control and be responsible for my own emotions and reactions. I can't control or be responsible for the emotions and reactions of anybody else, no matter how hard I try. Another one is, what happens to me and around me in my life is not nearly as important as how I choose to interpret and respond to those circumstances and events. The next one is, I will never be upset by anything anybody else ever says or does or refuses to say or do that I think they should, unless I'm still judging myself negatively for doing the same or similar thing. This is a big hang-up for a lot of people. And they say, you know what, I never, you know, slapped anybody in the face, and I never screamed at anybody and called them horrible names, and I never raged against people like that, and I would never do that in public like that. And if we're just willing to play with these observations on our own and look at it from a variety of different perspectives, we're quite likely to wake up and realize that, you know, maybe I've never done that to somebody else, but I talk that way to myself on a regular basis. Maybe I've never actually done it, but boy, I have fantasized about it a lot. I've fantasized about punching somebody in the face or stabbing somebody to death or having them have a horrible car accident so I wouldn't have to deal with them. The more different ways I challenge myself to understand that it's all an inside job, and any time I have a negative emotion going or an upset state internally, the only productive thing for me to do is take all of the focus of my attention off of the outside world and turn it inside me and figure out, with the aid of some of these observations or tools like the Reality Management Worksheet or Ho'oponopono or Byron Katie's four questions, or the Sedona Release Methods questions. Turn it, the focus, inside myself and explore. Ask to be shown, how am I creating this upset? The last thing on the list of bottom line observations is also relevant here. It says, whenever I have a negative thought about myself or somebody else or a negative emotion, I can instantly know three things. The first one is, this is false or it's based in a lie. Number two, it's not about what's going on in the moment. This is an old tape playing. I'm never upset about what's going on in the moment. And the third thing is, if I take an action from a negative emotional state or a recurring negative thought, I'm only going to make my current situation worse. There's no way I'm going to improve anything about my life when I act from a negative emotional state. It can't happen. I can't make my situation better by pouring negativity into it. I remember a number of times when I've given a talk and I've burst into the old adage, you know, we've got to fight fire with fire. Well, there's nonsense in that. That's not ancient wisdom. That's idiocy. You are never going to find a fire department where their tanker truck is, they send it out to a fire and it's loaded with napalm. It's never going to be loaded with an accelerant. It's always going to be loaded with water or foam or something to stop the process of the fire, not to add to the process of the fire. We are never going to solve the hatred problem we have by hating those who hate, or even by hating hatred. We are never going to have enough wars to establish peace. I'm never going to be able to act from a space of a negative emotional state in a way that's going to lead me to an improvement in my life. Whatever I do to act from a negative emotional state is just going to make my situation worse. Only, always, and forever. Therefore, one of the best things I can do whenever I notice a negative emotional state or recurring negative thought is interrupt my impulse to act outwardly and turn the focus inside and ask to be shown. How can I look at this situation differently? What, if anything, might I change in my interpretation of events to have a more positive interpretation of the very same data points? How might I learn to look at something other than what I'm focused on? Pam Grout mentions the reticular activating system in her book, and the research on this part of the brain is amazing. This is the part of the brain that if you go out and you buy a new or a used car, and you've never had a Toyota before, but you buy a Toyota, you start seeing Toyotas everywhere. You never really noticed how many Toyotas there were. Or it's so dramatic that you're noticing them so much more often that you literally begin to think, oh my gosh, when I bought a Toyota, everybody in my neighborhood decided to buy a Toyota. And there's been no change in other people's habits. The only thing that's changed is your awareness. You see what you're looking for. We always see what we expect to see and what we're looking for. If we expect problems, we see problems. If we expect things to work out smoothly, they work out smoothly. If we expect things to work out and be very torturous, they're very torturous. The research on the reticular activating system is what has given rise to people putting up signs like, start seeing farmers, start seeing motorcycles, because literally, after people, especially in the Northern Hemisphere, they go through a winter where there aren't very many motorcycles and there aren't very many farm vehicles around, people stop looking for. They only expect to see cars. And even though the light of the sun might be bouncing off of a motorcycle or a tractor, the image of the motorcycle or the tractor may not register in the brain of the driver who's just not looking for that. Michael Rice has talked about this several times recently. There's been research where they were doing brain mapping for cats, and they mapped the activity of the cat when a bell sounds. And there's a part of the brain of the cat that registers the bell and lights up when the bell sounds. And it's reliable. Every time you sound the bell, the cat's brain recognizes it and fires, and you can see that part of the brain in the cat get active, and you know that the cat has heard the bell. You don't even have to see a response from the cat externally. You can see the brain, the part of the brain that's responding to the noise of the bell. But then if you put a mouse in a glass cage in front of that cat and ring that bell, there's nothing in the cat's brain that registers the noise of the bell. The cat is so focused on the mouse that there is nothing trickly showing any kind of a chemical or electrical activity in the brain of the cat. So quite literally, the noise of the bell is not showing up for the cat, even though we know mechanically, the air that vibrates that creates the sound is reaching the cat's ears. It's just not registering in the brain. Why? Because all of the cat's focus is on the mouse in the cage, in the glass cage. What we expect to see, A Course in Miracles says it this way, we must learn to understand the distorting power of the way we want things to be. What we're looking for, we tend to create in one way or another. If we're looking for ways to be irritated, we'll find them. If we're looking for ways to feel gratitude, we can find them. If we are willing to accept this increasing all the way up to 100% responsibility for what we're experiencing internally, we can develop the skills that allow us to craft and create an entirely different experience of life, even though the external experiences may not change very much, ever, or it may take a while to change. But the bottom line is, we can change our experience. I have the blessing of doing this work in therapy for all these years, so I know how powerful the dynamic of choice and focus is, and how powerful the practice of gratitude can be. I know how many people have 10, 100, 1,000 times more money than you do, and they're 10 times more miserable than you are. I know that everyone has their issues. No one skates through life without upsets, without insecurities. I know so many people that think, and this is, you know, part of the stuff that comes out of the Tao Made Easy, they're talking about this. So many people think, when I finally get this, when I finally get that, when I finally get enough money, when I finally have a different house, when I finally have the perfect relationship. And if you follow those people, and they actually do acquire one of those things that they're convinced they need to have in order to be happy, once they've acquired it, whatever that joy factor or contentment factor is a very temporary relief or change. And the bottom line is, in anywhere from minutes to hours to days to weeks, they can be miserable. I remember listening to a lecture from a Harvard psychologist, and he started off, the lecture is about happiness and what makes us happy. And he said, he started off with a question. He said, by show of hands, how many people think they would rather, they would be happier if they won multiple millions of dollars in the lottery rather than becoming paraplegic, meaning losing the use of your legs? And, of course, every hand in the audience shoots up, and he says, okay, fact of the matter is it's a trick question. You're all wrong. And then he explained, these two populations of people, people who have won millions of dollars in the lottery and people who have become paraplegic after having the full use of their arms and legs, these two populations of people are populations we have a tremendous amount of data on, because psychologists and sociologists have been studying these groups. And he says, by self-report, this is critically important. This isn't somebody on the outside judging. This is by self-report, the happiness quotient, the contentment quotient of these two groups of people within 1 year of winning multiple millions of dollars in the lottery and becoming paraplegic after having the use of your legs is the same. There's no statistical difference in these groups of people in their happiness quotient. And if you're like most of us, you look at that and you should be shocked. What do you mean? I'm not going to be happier a year after winning multiple millions of dollars in the lottery than a year after losing the use of both my legs. Happiness is an inside job. It is not created by the things we accumulate and identify with. Guy Finley says it this way. He says, how could this thing that you think you want to acquire to get happiness, how could it possibly be tied to your happiness if the moment you achieve it, now you have to be afraid that you're going to lose it? How could it be responsible for your happiness and in the same moment be responsible for your fear? It's just a mind game. It's just a false perception. It's a completely unproductive set of conclusions. It's a trap. It is one of the many examples of sustained incoherence that David Bohm talks about. There's that movie I Am with Tom Shadyac, who is the producer and director of a whole bunch of movies, comedy movies, Ace Ventura, Pet Detective, and things like that. And he had a traumatic brain injury that left him with post-concussive syndrome, and he was a millionaire when this happened. So he had all kinds of money to try and explore all of these complementary or alternative or wacky different kinds of treatments for his crushing headache and disorientation and all those things that go with post-concussive syndrome. And he got lucky, and the pain let up, and he realized from that experience that when he was thinking he'd rather die than go on living because the pain was so bad, and he had millions and millions of dollars, but he couldn't, you know, enjoy them because the pain was so bad. And he began thinking about life and about all the things he'd seen on the news. And so he decided to use his talent as a director and interview some of the best minds in the world about how is it that we create such misery in the presence of such abundance. And one of the things that he talks about in that movie is that people kept telling him, you know, you're a millionaire now, you need a bigger house, and you're a multimillionaire, you need a bigger mansion. And he talks about the day that his realtor closed on his next new big house, swimming pool, tennis courts, etc., circular staircase leading down to a massive foyer in the front, by the front door. And he said that the real estate agent handed him the keys and said goodbye and walked out, and Tom Shadyac sat down and realized that now he's got possession of this house, and he doesn't feel any different than he did, you know, three or four houses ago. The acquisition of the outside thing is not what's responsible for the good feeling that we have. So Abraham says, listen, in recognition of everything that Guy Finley talks about, and how can what you get be responsible for your joy if in the next moment it's also responsible for your fear that you might lose it and then lose the joy? And Abraham says, what you want when you decide you want a big house, you want a fancy car, you want the perfect relationship, you want a bigger stereo, what you want is the feeling you believe you're going to have, that pleasant emotional state, that contentment, that safety, etc., that you think you're going to get once you acquire it. So Abraham says, so do yourself a favor and create that emotional state. Because, as Abraham says, your most important creation in every moment is your emotion in that moment. Your most important creation in every moment is the emotion you're feeling in that moment. So then Abraham says, so if you have an urge to get a fancy BMW sports car because it's going to be so thrilling and you're going to feel so accomplished and it's going to be so give you that buzz, find a way to create that emotion of that sense of accomplishment and that buzz and that gratitude and that feeling of being a success. Create that emotion first. Then, if you still want the car, go get the car. Because then you'll have that emotion whether the car comes or goes, whether somebody steals the car a week after you've got it, or whether somebody rams into it and the insurance won't pay for replacement. You still have the capacity to generate the emotional state that you were craving and thereby improve your experience of life moment to moment, independent of the external circumstances. And that's why we teach these tools, because anytime I'm creating a negative emotional state internally, if I wake up and realize that the only reason I'm feeling this anger, this sadness, this fear is because of my internal processing, then I can choose to change it. I'm not a prisoner of that negative emotional state once I recognize that I'm creating it. It's critically important for me to be able to observe, what is it that's creating my upset, my sadness, or my fear, or my anger, or my resentment, or my hurt? Because once I recognize how and where and why it's being created, then if I really don't want it, don't want to keep experiencing it, now I've got options for changing it. But if I'm blaming it on the outside circumstances or on the accident of birth and I was born to a poor family or I was born in a war-torn country, if I'm blaming my experience of life on those external factors, then there is nothing I can do. I don't have access to anything that can change it for the better. So we're encouraging people to step into the questioning of all of these things they've been taught about how they're only upset because this, that, or the other thing, And we're encouraging people to step into the practice of the use of these tools like the Reality Management Worksheet, the MindShifter Targeted Journaling Tool, the EFT Tapping, the breath work, soon and often, so that you can discover your infinite capacity to choose the focus of your conscious awareness and how it's the focus of that conscious awareness in each new present moment that actually creates your experience of life in that moment. And we would be happy to support you in creating a more joyful, a more loving, a more gratitude-based experience of life moment to moment in any way we can, especially with support in the application of these tools. So, our call-in number that Susan just used is 563-999-3581. Welcome, Susan.
Thanks, Dr. Tim. This shouldn't take very long. I have a confession to make. I woke up in the middle of the night remembering Laura McGowan's chapter on lying. And I have a confession. The story about the book falling off the bookshelf, the book was leaning up against the pile of books on the floor. It did not fall off the bookshelf. I needed to tell you that. And I need to tell Michael that I want to stop doing those little stretchings of the truth or lies outright and just allow that whatever happened is good enough or maybe even a miracle in itself. The fact that my eyes fell on it would have been enough of a story, but it's been bothering me a lot, so I thought I'd call you up and just lay it out there.
Well, congratulations on choosing the truth. You know what they say about that?
Nope.
It sets you free.
I always heard this phrase from Chinese adage, he who lie must have long memory.
Exactly.
That's also.
Yeah. Oh, the tangled web we weave when first we practice to deceive. That's the way I first heard it. And a few years ago, after having all of this work with Michael and listening, watching the Anil Seth video, it came to me to say, oh, the tangled web we weave when first we practice to perceive. Because each of us is creating our own perceptions. And the Course in Miracles has a line where it says something like, perception was created as an attack on God. Perception is an interpretation of what is rather than a direct relationship with what is.
Right.
So congratulations for choosing truth and freedom.
Well, maybe I'll feel that later. I just feel embarrassed. I know it's not a big deal, but it is a big deal. It just is a big deal.
So what part of it is a big deal for you?
Admitting it, admitting that.
So it's a big deal in a good way or a big deal in a bad way for you personally in this moment?
Big deal. I guess it's both. Big deal because it's admitting something embarrassing. Big deal because I'm admitting something embarrassing.
Okay, then I strongly encourage you to do a worksheet or two, do some tapping and breathing. Perhaps reread that chapter a few times in Laura McGowan's
I remember,
book.
Yeah. Maybe I should. I remember being struck with it at the time and identifying. I said, well, I do that too. But then I did it. And I didn't even think about it until I was recounting it to you when we were going over the previous day's extra work with Michael. And I found myself saying it to you and modifying it a little bit. Because I thought, oh, my God, this just didn't happen that way. And then last night I woke up with this Shrek thinking, okay, full disclosure now. Yeah, it was hard to do it. I trusted that you wouldn't be mad, but it was hard anyway.
And let's be honest, if I generate anger over something like that, I have my own work to do.
Yeah.
Right? That's not, there's nothing in that where you would be making me angry. And that's one of the things that we're so powerfully trying to help each other observe in this work. It's an absolute lie every time somebody tells us, you made me angry. Every time we tell somebody else, you're hurting my feelings, you're upsetting me, you're scaring me. It's an absolute hallucination.
I get it. And I also realize that your anger is the least of it. This is a very early thing. I'm afraid you won't want to talk to me anymore. You won't like me. If you like me, you won't like me anymore. And that I'm always walking a thin line between being acceptable and being a bit too much. This is all very early mother stuff popping right out there.
Well, so I'll just say it again. Congratulations for choosing truth, peace, and freedom. Because that's, you know, the only way I can have that is to accept it. Right? It's the truth of my life. It's right here. I can either pretend it's not here and generate all kinds of upset, or I can accept it and then have life.
Yeah, I want to practice this a lot. You know, it's in our radio show culture, at least the intensive. There's a lot of hyperbole, and this isn't anybody's fault, anybody's concern than my concern. But to keep quiet and to say what's really true and only as much as true is going to be a big discipline for me. I tend to go to wanting to be pleasing, say wonderful things, do lots of thanking, appreciating. And much of the thanking and appreciating is really through. Stop giggling. What are you laughing about?
I can't stop giggling. If what you say strikes my funny bone, I have to giggle. So just notice how defended you are when you're doing all of those things. And then just notice what you're defending from. Because that's the path out. You know, Guy Finley has a whole host of stories in his old work where, you know, the knight or the princess is trying to, you know, win out over the dragon or the monster, and they gird themselves with all the special armors and all of the prayers and medallions and everything. And in every one of those stories, the bottom line is they have to strip off all of their armor and walk in naked.
Oh, yeah, that's it.
Because this is right out of the Course in Miracles, where it says, you know, when you defend, you're creating the experience of attack, et cetera.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
I can feel it.
Yeah, and so my chuckling is just seeing you just throwing down the shield and throwing down the sword and taking off the helmet and taking off the armor plating. And then when you act from your perfect safety, you get the experience of your perfect safety. And Course in Miracles would call it, you know, your invulnerability and your vulnerability and all that crip-crap. But the way I've sorted it out better for myself is to say you are either vulnerable or you have the perfect safety that existed when you were created by your Creator and is part of your existence and can never be taken from you. So I realize we've done it again. Thank you for chiming here in the last few minutes, and congratulations on your choice for truth. I know from my own personal experience that it will be a relief for you.
Yeah.
Jeannie's okay. Here. I will remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Chan. It's been a great conversation. I got lost in it and didn't realize the time was up. So,
well, have a wonderful show.
Yeah, it was really good. Thank you. Thank you. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. Today is Wednesday, April 28th, 2021. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581, and press 1. And that puts you into queue to talk to us. And we'd love to hear your comments and questions, because that makes this your show. And, Susan, I think it's a perfect example, though, of, and there's no apology needed. I understand where you're coming from and wanting to express the truth. But, you know, like you said, and you worded it perfectly, if your eyes had just fell upon the book, that was still a miracle that it popped up right when you needed it. Or so, you know, that whether it just fell over or fell off the desk or your eyes just fell upon it, either way, I think it's still an awesome miracle. There's actually a song that Michael and I listened to. I can't think of the name of it right now. Michael, you're on with us. What's the one where it says, and now everything is a miracle?
Say it again. Say it again.
The song that we listened to where the guy says, and now everything is a miracle.
Oh, that's everything's a miracle.
Yeah. Is that the name of it?
I think it is. Give me just a second. Let me look here. I have it.
So while you're looking for it, what we're talking about, and Susan, I'll let you tell it. So go ahead. It's awesome.
Michael, yes, I feel as if I have only half confessed. I confessed to Dr. Tim, and I'm confessing to you now that I stretched a truth. You know, when we were doing that amazing work, what?
Oh, you stretched the truth. Oh, my God. I'm going to have to do worksheets on that.
Well, the point where it was a lie. And it was about the book that fell off the shelf. It didn't fall off the shelf. It had been propped up against a pile of books ready to take to a sale, and it belongs to a friend, so it didn't want to go to the sale. It wanted to go to my friend. My eyes fell on the book, and I said, oh, Michael, amazing. The book fell off the shelf. That wasn't true. My eyes fell on the book. My eyes fell on it, not the book fell.
Kind of similar.
Anyway, yeah, well, not similar enough. And, you know, I've known this since I did it. I thought, oh, crap, what am I doing? I'm just making this more glorious than it is. It's good enough as it is. It's plenty good enough. It's great as it is. What am I doing? But I woke up last night and I thought, I just better come clean. So end of confession.
And I told her it didn't matter whether the book fell off the shelf and was a miracle or whether her eyes fell on the book. Either way, everything is a miracle. And that's why I was asking about that song.
Right. So the song is Peter Meyer, M-A-Y-E-R, Holy Now. Peter Meyer. It's awesome. Awesome piece of music.
Nice.
And he starts off with, you know, when he was a boy going to church and, you know, listen to the priest and the Holy Word, and, you know, like there were no miracles then, and he laments how, you know, why don't miracles happen now? And then all of a sudden he moves into, oh, I got it. It's all a miracle. It's a pretty sweet piece of music. I think Dr. Tim actually introduced it on the show maybe 2 years ago or so. He had come across it somewhere.
I just put a link to it in our notes for today, too.
Good. Thanks, Jeannie. I was hoping you'd do that.
Sweet. So what else is exciting in your world, young lady? Besides now you've done confession, and I guess that now makes us officially priests, right?
Right. I do want exoneration, but you're also, it uncovers a habit. I stretch, I shape. I mean, some of it is good. If you write an opera, you have to tell a story. And if you tell the story, you have to make the story interesting. And usually it's interesting, but there's a little zing, there's a little something that sometimes is needed to add to it. Or when people make a movie out of a book or a biography, it says based on. What does that mean? It means the story is based on this life, but it's why. To make it dramatic enough to be valid as a theater piece. But then in personal life, we do it for other reasons. I do it to be pleasing, to be sensational, to be impressive, to be better than, to
keep yourself in
suffering.
Know,
just, what? I didn't
hear
that.
To keep yourself in suffering.
I'm not aware of the suffering. I'm aware of being so puffed up sometimes that I couldn't possibly get through a doorway. But it doesn't always end up like that. It ends up quite, maybe that's where the suffering comes in, is afterwards the shame of it,
well,
you know.
Well, my offering is I've watched you use that very technique, and this would be one of the best reasons I could think of for quote-unquote confessing it, to get it out and get a look at, is that I've seen you puff things up to make you bad or wrong.
Whoa.
To drag you down mm-hmm. into pain and suffering. Oh, look, here I am doing it again.
Yeah.
Have you ever observed yourself doing that?
Yeah.
So that would be the place to really be willing to confess it and throw it away. You know, a little embellishment here and then can be fun and useful. But when you start using it to beat yourself up, that's when it really needs to be confronted and as a habit of mind and removed.
Okay. I'll take that and stick it in there. This has been, I didn't mean to push one, except I really wanted to make that confession, but this has been the most, and I'm jealous. I was wishing that I had a partner in crime here to do the breathing even, and to be taken through the process. The process seems to take care of itself anyway, I'm glad to say. And I think
it
I'm
does.
Getting maybe where I need to go, but it's been messy and indecisive, and I love it when you say you can't figure it out, don't try to figure it out. And the best part of reviewing the still point breathing instructions you gave in the last intensive was that you go there with no goal. You go there knowing nothing and with no intention except to just do it. I never heard that before, Michael.
Yeah, it's not about producing an outcome. It's about opening the space.
Mm-hmm.
You know, literally, I mean, how many times have you heard me say it? Be out of your mind. Be out of your mind. To heal, you got to be out of your mind. The breath does a masterful job of taking us out of our minds. And if you make it a goal, then the mind will keep going, yeah, are we out of our mind yet? Are we out of our mind yet? And you just engage it. So it's like,
right,
let it go.
Of course.
Let it go and just let
right.
it open.
Competitive, too. So when somebody says, I saw purples and golds and I had this great insight about my uncle and I did this, I'm sitting there thinking, damn it all. And that's where the self-beating, I didn't get that. I kept swallowing, as a matter of fact. I kept closing my mouth to undry it up and stuff like that. And oh, my God, the whole thing has to go. Oh, what a relief that is.
Yeah. That's one of those embellishments. So you can say to yourself, oh, that's what I do to myself. And I can let that go. That's one of the places where that confession is going to serve you, because you can let go of that and not have to do that one anymore, where it leads you down a path that isn't about your light and your love and your healing, your presence.
Well, Dr. Tim has got an evil streak, because he started chuckling. And I thought I was confessing this big, important thing, and he was chuckling. Now, I liked that he did that, but at the time I thought, what? This isn't funny. Yeah.
Well, there's another one of those embellishments.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, this is, see, this is about me being whatever word it is, bad, wrong, evil, whatever. This isn't funny. Well, you know, when you do it to yourself, it's good for a laugh, but it's created a lot of suffering, so it's really an important dynamic to let go of.
Well, thanks.
If you're
going
to embellish,
on,
always embellish toward the into the arena of love.
Okay. Okay.
Okay.
That's a good place to start.
Yay, for sure. For sure. And how's that young man, Tim, doing?
Tim Bingham, I don't know where he is. He's doing well. We just co-direct. Oh, Michael's asking how you are. Oh, he's having a nap. Oh, my goodness. Sorry.
Oh, don't wake
Sorry,
him up.
Tim, go back to sleep. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. He's doing well. Doing well.
You just
you.
Finished directing a...
Well, we had our Zoom group, and it's been terrific. It's just been a good group. It's great. That's all.
The Mind Shifters group?
Yeah.
Sweet.
And he's
sweet.
Good.
Awesome.
It's good.
Awesome.
Yeah,
all right, young lady. Well, anything else on your mind?
My eyes just fell on a book, and it says, the moment of lift. Okay. That's the truth. Yeah. All right,
cool.
Michael. No, I'll mute and listen. Thank you so much.
All right. You have a blessed one. We appreciate you.
Thanks.
Cherish you deeply. All right. Well, Miss Jeannie, before I start looking at our reading for today, do you have any thoughts for us? Anything, anybody out there with a hand up in the phone queue? Anything happening in the chat room?
No, it's all quiet. Nobody has a hand up. No questions in the chat room. And I'll just say that I did finally, I don't have them all converted up to Vimeo, but Michael is buying me a new faster hard drive. So I should be able to get all the videos done this weekend. But the links are up on the website. So,
Yeah, actually, it's taking a whole new computer. It's, the hard drive isn't going to do the job, so we've actually ordered a whole new computer and screen and all of that to upgrade to be able to process that kind of intense data processing. So, keep able to take things to a new level with all this digital work that we're doing. So that's cool, and I'm loving the feedback that we're getting on that. On that particular recording. If you haven't listened to it, go to the notes. I'm sure Jeannie's probably pasted in there again today now that I mentioned it.
I did.
The last day or two, there is a lecture from the 48-tape series on A Course in Miracles that I did back somewhere between 35 and 40 years ago. I don't even have exact dates. And there are 50 out of, or 48 out of, I don't even know, several hundred that we have. And with the feedback we're getting, I may go back and see if the tapes are still good to be able to convert from the other couple of hundred of them and put them up online. But I'm really enjoying the feedback we're getting and how it's impacting people. So if you haven't listened to it, it's up for the next couple of weeks as a freebie to give a listen to it. It's a 2-hour lecture. It's number 47, G, or number 27?
I actually, yes, and I've got the link in the notes that you can click on. It's lesson number 47 that's called Healing Our Planet. And so that's free to the listeners until May the 10th. And then all 48 are now available in the MP4 catalog, and I've put a link to that, which they'll be streaming. And they're $7 individually, and if you get the full set of 48, it's they're $5 each, which is $240. And if you buy the set before the May the 10th in the next 2 weeks, then we're going to offer you the special price of $200. Now, that offer is not on the website, so if you want to do the full set in the next 2 weeks, send the $200 via PayPal to family and friends. That way we're not charged a fee. And then drop a text or an email to Michael or I saying that you purchased the full set. And then as soon as I get them all up this weekend, then I will send them out.
I'm looking forward to starting to listen through the whole series. One of the things that I rarely do is listen to anything that I've recorded from the past, and I'm usually kind of wowed by it when I do listen, and this particular tape was no exception. And so thank you, Doug Bingley, by the way, if you're listening, for all the work you did to convert those. Doug took the physical cassette tapes and converted them to digital, did a beautiful job of it. And so thank you for that input, Doug. Appreciate your support. So I'm going to turn to the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And if you want to follow along, you know, each day we're reading a small piece of the book. And let's see, we're up to page 60 out of, if I remember correctly, it's about 200. So we're a little less than a third of the way through, and this is April. Okay. So 4 times 3, it'll be just about right to continue through the year. That's cool. Anyway, we're on page 60 and looking at ancient wisdom, talking to Richard about I don't even know how to say it. It is so far beyond when you get back to building the brain cells about the words of Yeshua in the Aramaic language, when you go back to his original words and his original first century meanings. Of course, you say, well, Michael, how do you know you've got original first century meanings? Well, of course, nobody can say that 2,000%. However, we had 25 of the top Rameses in the world on the team working on this translation work. And one of the stated objectives was to get the most accurate first century meanings of those words that we could get. And, you know, I'm the director of the foundation that's doing that translation work now. And most of the original people that were involved in it have passed away. And I don't speak, read, or write Aramaic. And that's part of the way that the system was set up. My task in doing the work, and actually some of those 48 tapes were part of the development of this, was to take what we were learning and bring it into the laboratory of the classroom. Did it produce the result that it purported to produce? I.e., you'll notice, yes, if you go back and actually listen to his words as opposed to his so-called followers, people who think they're following him, who've got all kinds of doctrines and dogmas and theories, and they're going to shove it down your throat with fear. If you won't accept it, you know, you're going to burn forever. In the name of a man who said, I come to bring you life and bring it more abundantly. And if you engage in my work, you know, the first and most important thing is that you function as the presence of love, that this filter in the frontal lobes of your brain opens and provides you with this presence of conscious, active love. And so my task was to take what we were decoding from the first century Aramaic, put it in the classroom. Could we produce the result of someone functioning more and more as love? Well, the prison population in the project was reduced by over 90% recidivism. I mean, it emptied the jails. It definitely produced the result. So, you know, that was the verification that we actually had accurate information going on, that we were actually putting out accurate ideas. And, of course, that's what we're continuing to do. And so we're trying to get the point across to Richard, the character in the book, who's saying, yeah, religion, boy, that's all crap, to say, well, yeah, I got that you got some judgments and you got some pain and you got some trauma, but what's the truth about it? And so Richard is now starting to breathe a little easier. He's gone through a process of forgiveness, although it was kind of an unconscious process for him with his parents. And we point out the shift in his mind as a result of that and point out that that is the process of forgiveness. So we'll read on. I say to Richard, notice your parents were not involved in this process, and neither they nor the actualities of the past have changed. Yet you feel better. That's what he just finished saying to me. He says, I've done an explanation. It was getting complicated for me. He says, well, I'm not sure I heard everything you said, but I feel better. I feel relieved. You're the one who's always in charge of your feelings, Richard. So no change is required of anyone but you in order for you to heal. Our natural state is happiness. I might substitute the word joy there, actually. If I were writing the book today, I would substitute the word joy for happiness. Our natural state is joy. Happiness is a dopamine rush that you get when you achieve a goal. You get something. You know, here's this new thing in your hands. You go, oh, I'm happy. And then when the dopamine wears off, one goes back to their old state. But our natural state is where we are connected to love and therefore live in joy. The human being is designed to feel good. Just observe the ease and joy of the child before it's impacted by our cultural insanities. And, of course, we've been sharing with you for almost 3 years now the ease and the joy that we get to keep participating in with this young lady called Ari Rain and the beauty that she brings just as her natural state. And we're here to offer that's achievable no matter what's going on in your world when you live as a human being. Now, you may not be happy about something that happens. You may not like something that happens. You may not be getting a dopamine rush of something or with achieving a goal. But the underlying state of joy is your natural condition, and we're looking to uncover that. And the way you uncover it is by removing the cover. Removing the cover is called forgiveness. So Richard says back to him, well, you said the release process began, Michael. Does that mean it's not complete? Will I have to go through more of that pain? Richard winced as he wrapped his arms around his knees. Healing is not an event, Richard. It's a process. It takes time. And it happens in stages. You'll tend to experience your process as painful as long as you resist and want to hold on. And there's a real key in the process. Now, it's interesting, in the Aramaic language, the word Satan is quite different than our culture. You know, the Greeks have given us this horrible creature, kind of, you know, Dante's hell, Satan, the creature that's out to get us, this insanity that has been perpetrated in our culture as Satan. But if you were to go back and sit down and have a conversation with Satan and say, Yeshua, tell me about Satan. Tell me about this dude with the red suit, the tail, and the pitchfork. He'd laugh at you, or probably laugh with you, inspire a laugh in you, and say, oh, those Greeks, you know, that's all Greek to me. That doesn't make any sense at all. That had nothing to do with what I was talking about. We know in our language what Satan is, what we mean by the word, and here's what it is. Your mind tends to be inertia-bound. Your mind tends to be locked into the realities that your culture teaches you, that your family system imposes on you, and that you buy into. And when you're invited to upgrade your perceptual constructs, when you're invited to move into a different space where you're connected to love, your mind, if you're trapped in Satan, will do this. Here's what Satan is. Your mind will say, oh, no, my true state isn't happiness right now. My true state is self-deprecation because look at the terrible thing that I've done. And go into resistance to the truth. And then mislead yourself with a story from carbon-based memory. That's Satan. So Satan is the resistor, one who misleads. Got nothing to do with the dude with the red suit, the tail, and pitchfork. Just, you know, but the red suit, the tail, and the pitchfork, I mean, has been so graphically and horrifically presented, certainly is a great way to keep people in fear, the exact opposite of the objectives of the teachings of man, Yeshua. The exact opposite. And so here we have the non-being mind, which would be another definition of Satan. Satan has taken over the teachings, and now Satan is going to tell you that fear of God is the beginning of wisdom. It's like, hello? That's Satan talking. Excuse me, preacher, that's what it is. The man was here to bring us to life. The man was here to give us a direct experience of the presence of love and show us how to remove everything that didn't belong there. And now, and I said, Yeshua would say to you, over 15 times I said in the translations, in at least in the King James, I said, fear not. And here now you're using that word. You're trying to get people to go into fear over my father, our father. Like, how ridiculous is that? But, you know, people have sat up there and done that to people, and people have lived in such terror and trauma. Boy, if you even question it. I know there'd be people, if they cut this little section out and send it to their preacher, that preacher would be calling me down and condemning me to hell, because he's going to use that exact tactic. And that tactic is direct from Satan, his own mind, the resistor, one who misleads. But, oh, the terror and trauma has been inflicted on people for centuries by people who didn't have a clue what the man was actually teaching. And, you know, Richard is a prime example of someone who has been trapped. And, you know, we're working him through it, letting loose of anything that's based in hostility or fear in your mind never, ever, ever belongs there. It's a lie. It's all a lie. Did something terrible happen, quote unquote, relative to where I stand today? I may say that something terrible happened. But, you know, step back for a moment and observe your life and look at some of the things in your past that when they happened, your mind went, oh, this is so bad. This is so terrible. And here you are, you're maybe 20 or 30 years down the road, and you look back at that event and you go, oh, my God, that was one of the best things that ever happened to me. Oh, the wonderful results that produced. Oh, man. Well, you know something? It was just as wonderful when it happened as it is now. But notice you terrorized and traumatized yourself over it because you held some form of hostility or fear in your mind. If we could let go of that, the gifts that life delivers to us would come so much faster and so much easier. And so we're here to support the gifts that were given by this man, Yeshua. You know, the trauma that the people in that culture lived in was just outrageous, what people had bought into. And time to let it go. Time to be finished with it. And so forgiveness, you know, we have an app for that. If you go to your app store on your phone, and type in the words Heartland, H-E-A-R-T-L-A-N-D, one word, then Aramaic, A-R-A-M-A-I-C, forgiveness. Type that in your app store, and you'll be looking at the world's only forgiveness app. Thank you, Jeannie, for the awesome work you did in putting that together. It's a free download. It's a private app. It only asks for one permission. Not all this stuff we want to be able to use your dialer and your camera and record and send texts and none of that. One permission, and that is just to use the internet. When you actually do a worksheet in the app, if you want to print it and keep it as a record, then it's going to ask for one more permission, that is to write to your drive. But otherwise, we purposely constructed the app so there were no permissions required, or at least minimal, so that you could trust the fact that, you know, whatever you put in there, I mean, you can take your deepest, darkest, dirtiest secrets, put in there and work with forgiveness, and you are the only one who will ever have any access to it. We have no access whatsoever to anything that goes on with that app. So you can download it free and do forgiveness there, or go to our website, whyagain.org. We've got dozens and dozens and dozens of hours of instruction on it. We've got 10 years of radio show, 5 hours a day for, what, about 8 of those years. And then the last 2 years, we've had 2 hours, or pardon me, 5 days a week, an hour a day for the first 8 years or so. And then the last couple of years, 2 hours a day, 5 days a week. So, you know, the whole conversation's been variations on a theme about forgiveness. And so everything that we know, everything that we have about how to engage in the process and how to uncover and process through, support yourself through, support others through that process of uncovering directly the things that we've hidden from ourselves that tend to perpetrate the world of pain and fear, and how to dissolve it, how to get rid of it. So that's what we're here to do. And delighted and honored to have this opportunity to have this conversation with you. And Miss Jeannie, we're about the halfway point, so we've got 30 minutes or so left. Do we have anybody out there in the phone queue with a hand up or anything happening in the chat room?
No, it is all quiet. So someone press one. Give us a topic. What do you want to talk about?
And what's on your mind? How can we support you? This conversation is meant to be a dialogue. Yes, there is a monologue part of it, but it's meant to be a dialogue. We would love to hear your voice. How can we support you? What's on your mind? What are you working on? Do you have any questions on any of the tools? You know, anybody from the intensive have any thoughts or questions? Have any refinements on the use of the tools? Anything specifically going on in your world that you could use some support with?
We have a hand up.
And let's say hello to a hand.
It's area code 314. You're on the air. Who do we have?
Hello, Mikey and Jeannie. It's Doug. How are you?
Hey, Doug. Thank you, sir. We're doing well. We were talking about you earlier. I don't know whether you were there or not, but appreciating the fact that you did that conversion of the CDs or the cassette tapes to CDs and now to digital so that we can put them online. So.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Cool.
Glad
we've
done it.
So what's on your mind today? What's happening in your world?
Well, I wanted to address, in a way, it's like you're talking about how traditional religion uses fear to try and get people to, quote, do the right thing or whatever by saying, well, you're going to go to hell, you know. And as you were doing so, I was thinking about the first question that kind of came. There's a couple of things here, and it spreads out and, you know, into a couple of different areas for me personally. Like, I how does one not get upset? You know, sometimes I feel like, And yet speak the truth. You know, you talk about that, and it sounds sometimes to me like, and as you said, if you were to cut this section out and give it to a traditional preacher, they'd be pretty upset. And I feel like sometimes traditional Christians might be pretty upset when they hear that. I'm not sure if that's helpful or not, but that isn't my main point. It's more like that. I relate that to my present world with, say, the World Health Organization or the National Health people or, you know, all these people who put down, let's say, implement strategies that provide funds to Pfizer and Moderna and suppress the health and well-being of people, for example, by suppressing the value of ivermectin, which there's 83 studies that shows how helpful it is for COVID, and or almost any aspect of government that's similar, but that one's up for me a lot right now. And then disturbance arises in me. You know, I get very upset about that. Or
there's the key. Here's your lie. So let's stop right there. Here's your lie. I get very upset about that.
Yes, I'm in denial.
There's your mind in denial. So there's where your resolution lies. Because as long as you keep telling yourself that lie, that you're upset about that, you'll think that the disturbing frequencies and energies moving in your mind have something to do with the government and government manipulation. When you realize that, and I would just, when you look at that, a good way to go back and see maybe where it began is when you were manipulated by your power person, how did it feel?
Well, very similar and terrible. You know, I created in myself internal feelings of being oppressed and fearful and angry and upset, and you know, there's injustice here.
So how do you tell the truth about something that you see without being upset? Here's how you do it. Actually,
that's
Richard
right.
gets upset to me at me in the book when I answer this question for him. He says, you know, how do you do something like that and not be angry? Or who can do that? And my answer rolls along the line somewhere of someone who doesn't have anger in their mind does that. So my offering would be that you would be able to stand before the WHO. You could go make a presentation. And if you've cleaned up all the hostility and fear you have about being misled and manipulated by people in power, you would stand there and you would bring the presence of love and the energetic pattern and tone in your voice and the truth you would speak would permeate those minds in a way that they would have no option but to change. But as you go in there speaking your quote-unquote truth, you've oppressed me, you will create more of the same power person dynamic. In fact, you will become your power person. Notice the thing, when you if you had the opportunity to go confront the source of this whole story that you're talking about, notice that what you want to do to them, and I'm saying this without you ever telling me what it is you want to do, but I already know what you want to do. You want to do what your power person did to you that you hated the most around being manipulated. And that's what you do. That's what everybody does under stress, is whatever their power person did to them that they hated the most, that's what they want to do. And as you resolve that, let me take this in a different direction. Until that's resolved, you, Doug, and everyone who does that, we all do it to some degree with authority figures. That's one of the biggies on the planet, are a house divided against yourself. You want people to be in integrity and truth with each other. And yet notice the same abuse that was done to you is what, you know, in your heart of hearts, if you were really in that type of response in there, that's exactly what you do to them, right?
And I'm sure that then I resonate their power person files, and I am becoming a power person relative to them. And I see that. I just know there's so much richness here for me somehow, somewhere, you know, because I want to get all that out of me so that I can actually stand for truth in a way that doesn't do that.
Yeah.
And you know, it's like, or shy from it, which is what I tend to do then. It's just, well, I won't say anything because.
Yeah. You want the key? Integrate. Conscious.
Enough.
Integrate conscious, active, present love into the part of your mind that holds this trauma.
Okay, I like that very much.
That's the key. Until that's integrated into that part of your mind, it's going to be hard to even bring up or talk about. And you'll notice that the same dynamic that is operating if you were standing in front of the officials at the WHO is exactly the same dynamic that operates in your closest relationships. And you can't talk about it. And you can't talk about it because there's so much hostility or fear that oozes from your field that it arouses, as you just described, the power person and dynamic and the person you're talking to. And then they have so much hostility or fear that now we got a wall and there's no more conversation possible. And as each person opens the space, you know, and the breath is one of the keys to opening that space of bringing conscious, active, present love into that part of the mind, then because love is present, there will be safety in that conversation and there will be healing in that conversation. But when love isn't present, it's just going to do more of the same. And, you know, when we come together and you know, with our matching bags of garbage, we're not willing to own, you know, when we're doing a power person dynamic and be able to apologize for it and go, whoa, wow, what I did there. When we're not able to do that because love isn't present, and if love isn't present, truth isn't present, you know, it's not until the truth is told so love can possibly be present. And so when I stop letting those sneaky little lies come in, like, yeah, that really upset me, you know, when I think about it, and I don't remember exactly what those three or four words were that you just slid into that conversation, but when those words are no longer your regulatory speech, but your regulatory speech is, I see the truth of the hurt and the pain that I have around having been manipulated by people more powerful than me, people who are interested in control or money or stuff or power, whatever it is, that's the part of your mind that needs to be introduced to present love. And it'll begin to dissolve. And then you'll be the safe space. You will, instead of being a house divided against yourself, as Yeshua talked about, you'll be the safe space where those kind of conversations can open up. And then healing happens.
Integrate conscious act of love is part of holds this trauma. That's what you said, I believe.
Yes.
Is, right?
That's it.
All right.
Yes.
Trauma. Yeah.
Yeah.
And of course, all of
and
the above.
You can't. Yeah. You can't keep that pain dissociated, and the way we keep it dissociated is by saying, "Yeah, and it really upset me. It really hurt me." That's how I keep that part of my mind in a dissociated. You'll remember when you first came to Heartland and I used to teach the Why Workshop, and I'd put on the board, you know, when I taught the Why Workshop, deny, suppress, project. I mean, for decades, that's how I taught it. And if it were just that it was suppressed, it wouldn't be nearly as big a deal because I could just bring it to awareness. But it's not suppressed when I deny, when I think or speak as though something outside of me is the cause of something going on inside of me. I dissociate from what's going on inside of me. I literally make that part of my mind absolutely unavailable. And so when I just roll along in my conversation, I'm not censoring my speech. I'm not trying to say it the right way. And out of my mouth goes, yeah. And it just enrages me so much. Dingo. That's the dissociated content, and I need to open that dissociated part of my mind, that, you know, secret, hidden, locked away, not accessible to me part of my mind, and bring it forward in the presence of love. And I do that through forgiveness. I look at the goal that drives that perception, that look what they've done to me, and all of the shades of that gold, and it might be 77 times 70 different shades of it. It might be the desire for them to honor me. It might be the desire for them to tell me the truth. It might be the desire for them to be responsible for their own integrity. It might be the desire for them to be responsible for their own well-being or their own abundance. It might be the desire for them to share wealth. There might be 1,000 variations on the theme, the goals that I hold that keep that part of my mind away from the presence of love through me. And when I cancel the goal, the specific one, that is precisely what keeps that part of my mind in the dissociated state, and I cancel it, all of a sudden, I can bring love to that part of my mind and a transmutation of the pained energy. I integrate, I dissolve the presence of pain, and now I'm no longer a house divided against myself because the veil of my own temple in regard to that particular issue has been torn in two. And I've actually been able to access that part of me. And sometimes in accessing it, one of the reasons why we don't want to access it is because there's a lot of pain in it. Especially if it's something that happened over and over and, you know, seems to cost us dearly in our lives. It's like too much pain, too much trauma to deal with. And oftentimes the pain or trauma that I need to deal with isn't even just mine, but it's been going on for generations. Lifetimes, cultures destroyed over these kinds of dynamics. You know, I think, and I'm you know, I might suggest, what is your genetic history, Doug? Are you Scottish?
There is some Scottish. There's
okay. Well, I'll tell you, around this kind of injustice, there's one movie that I've watched. I talked about it last week, actually, Braveheart. And there's one specific scene in it where the king, you've heard me talk about this before, I'm sure, but the king says to his henchmen, you know, send in the Irish, because if you do this battle with arrows, the arrows cost us money. The Irish can go and get killed. They don't cost us anything. And I'll tell you, that opened such rage in me the first time I saw that in that movie, and I probably watched it 15 times in order to clean that vengeance and that rage out. It might be a good movie to sit down in front of with this whole conversation in mind and see what it resonates up for you. See if there's a genetic component for you with that, you know, British and Scottish, perhaps Irish history.
It could be very well, because I've never watched that movie. I've always avoided it. I've always felt like I don't want to watch that. Whenever it comes in front of me, I'm like, no, I'm not interested. And I saw that clip. I saw that very clip recently, and I was like,
really?
I did. I don't know.
How did you see that clip?
I can't tell you, but I remember seeing that clip and thinking, man, how...
Talk about synchronicity, you know, here, eh?
Yeah, so it's really a trip.
I think the universe is sending you a message, Doug.
Yeah, I guess so.
Sounds like it.
So I heard you say something that I don't think I have heard before, or I'm understanding differently or hearing differently. The goal, it's the... You know, I've always understood that the goal is what causes the unconscious content to be coming forward and driving the conscious reality.
Actually,
and
forming the conscious reality.
Forming,
you know, if you think
it, okay.
Of, you know, remember when you were in school and maybe you played sports and you wanted to be recruited, and a recruiter came to the school and watched all the, you know, the participants in the basketball team and picked three of the players, recruited them, took them into another place. That's how I perceive or I see the goal. The goal, you know, when you realize there are 10,000 measurable units of electrical activity firing off in the brain, and in that same time frame, there's a little tiny bit that's recruited into conscious content, 9 bits out of 10,000. It's the goal that determines which players, which concepts are going to play. Is it going to be rage? Is it going to be fear? Is it going to be sadness? Is it going to be grief? Is it going to be loss? What's going to play here? And it's the goal that pulls that content into activity, and the end result of the activity of that content is perception, the world we see. The world of false perception that needs to be collapsed. And when you kick the recruiter out, when you cancel the goal, that whole perception, that whole construct of the mind collapses in on itself, like the 9/11 towers collapsed in on their own footprint. And when that, what's conscious at one moment, when the goal is canceled, and that conscious content collapses in on itself, now you've got direct access to the original event that created the traumatic energy. And as you can pull that forward in the presence of love, that's where the dissolution occurs. That's where the actual forgiveness occurs.
That piece that you've said, I've pretty much understood. However, what I heard you say is the goal keeps, right, I heard, I'm not saying what you said, the goal keeps that trauma part of my mind from love, dissociates that trauma part of my mind from love.
No, it's my denial. No, it's my denial that does that. When I say to myself, that really hurt me, what I'm saying is there's a part of my mind that's hurt, and I keep that hurt part of me away from love by repeatedly knowing that somebody or something out there is the cause of my hurt. And that's my denial. So it's the denial that keeps that very content from being exposed to love.
All right. I probably misheard your words then in this case, because that when I heard that, I was like, what? You know, I understand that denial does that. It fills up my reality with some other story about it, you know, that's driven by the dissociative consciousness. But I heard the goal keeps the trauma part of my mind from love. And I was like, I never heard that before. Let me ask for clarity, which you just gave me. It's the denial.
Yeah, the denial does that. The goal recruits it into activity so that if we'll engage in forgiveness now, we've got the opportunity to process through whatever that is. Whatever that trauma, that original trauma is. And I may need to do that, all the shades of canceling around that one 77 times, 70 times. You know, and as I said earlier, all those shades of goals. And it's not, we actually don't get to the key part of the dissociated content that needs healing until we find the precise goal that pulls that into activity. So, you know, a lot of people will avoid. They'll say, well, you know, I just wanted them to be nice to me. That was my goal. And what I really wanted was for them to be honest and have integrity with me. You know, if we were to apply it to this current conversation around COVID and all. So until I went to that precise goal, because the mind works through resonance, because it's very exacting, you know, it's very, very precise through resonance, unless I get the right frequency, I don't get the content. You know, it's like sitting with my, you know, late at night with my AM radio where all these signals are bouncing around. And unless I get that station tune just exactly so, I get three other stations that come in on top of it. I don't get to get that specific content. And that's where tuning the goal and having the right goal is what's going to uncover that specific piece that's in need of healing. And it's that goal that the ego says, don't ever look here. Don't make me look at that. Boy, I'll slaughter you if you do that. Oh, you mean you're going to do what your power person did to you, to me, if I do that? Oh, okay, I got it.
And the thing that's being searched for is some kind of trauma. Generally, it's some kind of trauma that happened to me or my generation.
Actually, there's no search for that trauma. We're not suggesting that. Here's what we suggest you search for. You search for the thinking or the languaging that indicates that something out there is the cause of what's happening in here. And when I have that, then I locate the goal that drives that conversation. And when I cancel that goal, I will drop specifically into that unconscious content and bring it to the presence of love. And in bringing it to the presence of love is the release of the pain and the trauma, the healing, the actual forgiveness.
Whether or not the event comes to conscious awareness isn't so much relevant.
Correct.
As is it.
Exactly. I may do nothing more than just breathe through and process the energy. I may never be able to put a word to what it was. It was just like, oh, it was so yucky. I don't know what it was. And I may not. Or I may do the process and go, you know, I'm working with somebody and say, hey, I just feel so yucky, but I don't have any idea what it is. But like Richard, you know, we just said with the piece I was reading from Richard, it's like, well, I feel better. There may be no word for it. And then 3 days later, I'm walking down the street and all of a sudden I go, oh, that's what that was about. All of a sudden I go, oh, that was when blah, blah, blah. And I get the specifics of it. But I don't have to get any specifics. All I want to do is get the goal as tuned as I can or use as many variations on the theme around the goal as I can find until I hit the right one that, you know, opens that particular part of the mind. You know, it's kind of like opening a safe. all the tumblers have to fall into place. The goal is the thing that gives you the right combination.
Very good. Okay.
Cool. And once I brought love to that part of my mind, I'll be able to go have that conversation that I thought I could never have with anybody.
Right. Excellent. Okay.
Good breath. Sounds like a Lair processed.
Yeah. Right.
Awesome. Appreciate the work you're doing, my friend. Good.
Thank you. Okay.
Good questions. Good input. All right. Well, anything else on your mind for today?
Yeah, we may. I don't see we have 4 minutes left, but as we were going through all this, I was thinking, you know, what is then hell? You know, it's like okay, the preacher's trying to say, well, I'm trying to protect you from hell, and I'm going to use these non-being contact methods to try and get you to do what I think you need to do to stay out of hell. But there are, you know, 1 in 10 people, I don't know, who have a near-death experience and wake up saying to the doctor, save me, save me. I was just in hell. You know, it's like, I was just curious, is that hell?
Well, look
a
at,
creation?
Look what Yeshua, look what Yeshua did. Remember they said he descended into hell.
Right.
What does it mean? You went through carbon-based memory where there was an absence of the presence of the love of God, where love was not allowed. And the absence of that love is hell. And in order to step up to, metaphorically, what was called the kingdom of heaven, that is, return to the truth of being, he finished off the process that he started in the Garden of Gethsemane, the healing crisis. He started there, and he had to go down into that part of himself and forgive and remove that which made absent, or I should probably be more precise and make it appear that love was absent, because love, of course, is never absent, but we can set up shields that block it. It's awareness from us. And so remove that, and it's darkness. Jeannie, you know, we've only got a minute or two, but we were doing some breath work a couple of weeks ago. Jeannie, do you want to just share that moment where you came back from that deep still point?
Yeah, it was, I actually came back. Yeah, usually when you're in a still point, you just wake up with sometimes a little start, but I came back with a gasp and a just great terror and sorrow, and it was like I had been jerked from love. I felt like, you know, I was in this space. I compared it to the movie Matrix, where the people are in that state where they're still plugged in the back, and they're kind of like in a womb, and then they're, you know, ejected and then unplugged. I said, I felt like that, like I was in this safe, awesome, loving space, and then all of a sudden just became unplugged and jerked back. And it was just terror and sorrow that was unexplainable.
And for me as the observer, it was clear it was right down to her genetic toes that she was touching into that.
Okay, so we would say that perhaps the hell they're experiencing is their non-being content that is devoid of love. And then something like that.
And thinking that's who they are. Yeah, buying into that definition of self.
All right. Great.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All right. All right, my friend. Well, you have a blessed day. Appreciate everybody. Create the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world. And we'll look forward to talking with you tomorrow. Blessings.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mind Shifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.